Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for Banal of America
of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. July 4th has come and gone, and Banal of America is back on a different day. That wasn't really intentional, it's just how it worked out. Well, it was intentional. I mean, we chose the day, but we didn't plan to change it. It was just how we worked out the scheduling for tonight's guest, because I was chomping at the bit to get him on the show. I had heard he really kind of wasn't doing many interviews anymore, and then I woke up last week and I saw he posted he was looking for shows to go on, and I was like, shit, come on my show, holy shit. So I was immediately harassing and haranguing him like all last, Wednesday morning to get him on the show, and now we've got it. So welcome back to the show. He is an iconic conspiracy theory researcher. He's an absolute legend in the field of parapolitics. If he didn't coin the term parapolitics, he's been the one who's popularized it probably more than anybody. And, he's an all-time great, and he's revered by myself and a lot of my close friends, like Greg Bishop and Adam Grohe-Wrightley. I know they really look up to him, and I'm sure many other people that I'm tight with. He's an icon, folks, and he's back on Banal of America to help us celebrate the final season and to talk about something I have wanted to talk about for so long on this show, and we'll get into that in a moment. But welcome back to the show, Ken Thomas. Thank you for joining us here on season 10.
Tim, hi. I'm so flattered by everything you just said. It just bowls me over. Thank you for that warm welcome.
Oh, man, I mean it, dude. Something, it's kind of like part of the fabric of this show, dude. We celebrate the legends and the people who have put the time in and sacrificed, decades of their life on these subjects and stuff. I have so much, as somebody who's put a considerable chunk of my life into this over a decade now, it's like, and I know how hard that's been for me. So look, I'm going to make it all about me. So, folks, who put multi-decades in, it's like, wow.
Yeah, well, it's so nice that you're still there, Tim, and everybody that you just mentioned. It's just nice that they're all still around, because really I did kind of go into what I call semi-retirement, after years of doing Steam Shovel Press and writing everything, for a couple of reasons. Part of it was that the whole conspiracy scene just dwindled down to nothing. Many major figures died, friends of mine, John Judge, Acharya S., all that kind of stuff. So I've been slipping into early middle age or early old age, late middle age, I guess.
There you go.
Yeah, and after thinking about it for a while, I got to missing it. So that's why I started with another book, and this is actually the first interview. I did an interview specifically about the Maury Island case a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But this is the first interview that I've really done that's opening up the whole menu to whatever we want to talk about. So thank you very much.
Dude, thank you. I appreciate it. That's awesome. I'm psyched that we can be the first show to crack open Trumpocalypse Now, which I absolutely loved. It is the new book, Trumpocalypse Now. Talk about timely. Folks, this book, in a way, I think you can appreciate this. It's like, because we were kind of talking about it today on the Facebook. It's like, it's hard to even write a book this recent, because so much has happened since the book came out. It's like, holy shit. But
yeah, that's absolutely right. Actually, I got the idea. I had the hope actually, when I wrote the book, by the time I got to the end of it, that it would actually be more like a souvenir program. You know, the Trump would have self-destructed by now, and that's why everybody would want this little memento of the Trump years. But it's dragging on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even for people like me who have been following this really closely, it's like it really is a must-have because it's sort of a it catches you up and sort of is a refresher and reminds you sort of how we got here and all the different elements that sort of came into play and it describing it as a program is really that's really an apt description in a sense where it's like these are the players and this is
it's like the old pin bulletin board model of stuff. This is making these points early on in this thing, and you know, as you watch the news, actually you can relate it all back. A lot of times the news, fake news or the mainstream media or whatever, loses track of where all of these trains of thought and activities start. You know, I mean, there's still characters out there that they're trying to deconstruct, but their histories kind of get lost in the discussion. So it's a good book for that purpose.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'll say this too, because you have a sense of humor similar to mine. It's very a lot of places in there where there's laughs. So it's like with this whole thing. Now, it's funny. I should say this ahead of time. I guess I should preface this for the listeners. I mean, I don't know how Ken feels. I think I kind of know how Ken feels, but he sort of plays it pretty, he's not as vehement as I am. I fucking hate Donald Trump, folks. I really just can't stand him, and I think he's a traitor, and I'm a believer in the Trump-Russia conspiracy. So, like, I'm a card-carrying member of the Trump-Russia conspiracy theorists. So I've been saying it for a while, and I'm fucking walking around with my chest puffed out this week because of all this shit that's happened this week, so... You know, I believe that's true, and I think he's a shitty asshole, treasonous bastard. warning. That's my warning for the listeners who are Trump fans, or I think people who don't want to hear politics have already shut it off. But for Trump fans, you know, sorry, that's just how I feel about the guy. You know, I just think he's a lousy person and awful person.
Well, I'd like to inject here that for those people who are sympathetic toward Trump. Those theories are discussed in the book as well. You know, how can you not be against Trump? So in the broad stroke thing, yeah, it's kind of an anti-Trump book, but it's more like, it's like my other books. It's a sociological survey.
Exactly.
Everything. I mean, I should point out, I mean, part of the book is, back in the Clinton year, back in the early 90s, I wrote an article for the Washington Post in which I outlined all of the conspiracies that were going to be coming up in the Clinton years.
Mm.
And that actually became when Hillary Clinton later came up with the notion of the vast right-wing conspiracy. They issued not a dossier, but some kind of packet of stuff. And the first article that they included was this article that I'd written for the Washington Post. So
right.
It's not like, you know, this is not like a Clinton advocacy or a Democratic advocacy book as opposed to Trump. You'll notice on the cover, for instance, in the four corners, there's a Democrat, there's an elephant for a Republican, there's a donkey for a Democrat, there's an octopus for me, because that's what I'm known for, the octopus plus, and then there's a rhino. And not a lot of people get that about the rhino. I mean, because if you're Republican, just because you're Republican, it doesn't mean you're a Trump guy. A Republican name only.
Right.
A lot of people, you know, represent Trump as them.
Absolutely, yeah. And I should say, too, if they haven't already shut off the show, it's like, it's not that I think just that Trump's an asshole. I think a lot of these people are assholes, okay? I was no Hillary Clinton fan either, but, you know, for all the people that are, like, throwing back to her all the time, where it's, you know, in the news now, where it's like, well, she did this and she did that. It's like, dude, Donald Trump's the fucking president. I don't care what she did. You know, she lost.
Yeah,
she's out. So
yeah, that's over. That's over.
To steal Roger Stone's phrase, it's Don's time in the barrel. It's his time in the barrel now. So it's like that's just how it is. So
and also they represent a class. They represent that, you know what, that little 1% of super wealthy people that run the world, and all the wealth of the world is concentrated at the top, and you know the rest of us get the crumbs. So they're both of that class. So it's not, you know, the things that separate people are not Democrat and Republican really, and it's not race or social preference or anything like that. It's primarily class, you know. It's,
mm-hmm.
And these people that make it into that circle, the greediest, most ambitious, aggressive people there are. So anything you can say about them is not likely to be an insult. It's not likely to be untrue. I mean, all they are is greedy, lying bastards, and that's how they attain power, you know.
Exactly.
Trump's one of the main examples.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like they're all bastards, folks. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, let's not single out the Donald for this. But the point of the book, though, the subtitle of the book is the triumph of the conspiracy spectacle.
Right, exactly.
And I've had people think, you know, that again, I'm trying to say that this was a good thing. I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing. I'm just saying that it's a thing, and that Trump is actually a manifestation of the spectacle culture that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what brought him the power was television fame and actually what we've just been doing, you know, putting him down, ridicule, that was, he fed off of that. The more they ridiculed him, the culture ridiculed. Every night he's on, you know, Stephen Colbert, you know, throwing insults at him, you know, and those guys, you know, I mean, he's the funniest, goofiest guy who ever ran for president. And that's star quality.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And people, you know, we did like an election night show where it was just a complete, like, it was like the Hindenburg broadcast. And, you know, and people called in. They were like, you know, stop insulting. Like, I get why people voted for the guy. I get it. I get it from all the different reasons, you know. There are a whole bunch of reasons why people voted for him. I get it. But it's like, sorry, but I don't know. You know, and the funny part is you say in the book, I'm kind of jumping in a sense to the end because it just popped into my head, but it's sort of a jumping off point from what I was just saying here is because it's something I said in the past, and you sort of say it in different words at the end of the book, and it's like, I kind of have said this to people before. It's like, you know, yes, Trump is this absolute cartoon figure, but, like, for good or ill, we don't know necessarily because it's not going to happen for the future till the future, but, like, somebody who's a lot slicker and with a lot less baggage is going to, like, tap into this whatever he tapped into. And it could be good or it could be bad, you know?
Right. Well, something has to arise from the ashes. I mean, it's pretty clear he's not going to survive, you know, his term. And it's going to be crash and burn, and then we're going to have this Pence guy who apparently is distancing himself now from the Donald.
Right.
And, but, you know, who's another total nothing. And you know, the Democrats aren't very organized with any kind of leadership either. So we're really entering into a chaotic post-Trump period. You know, we were going to crash and burn on Trump, and God knows what's going to happen. Now, that's a scary, horrible thing in many people's eyes, but it's also an opportunity, you know, for things to change and grow in ways that we can't imagine that might be good.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
I'm a little pessimist about this.
Yeah. But it's like there was this energy out there, and like you said, I think you said in the book, you know, like the media and the Democrats haven't really responded to sort of what motivated these people to vote for Trump. You know, the disenfranchised people I'm talking about, not like just bad people, not the deplorables, but the disenfranchised people, you know. And like I said, I get why they voted for him. So it's like no one's, you know, some people are. I mean, some people are kind of figuring it out. But it's like on a greater sense, they've completely just moved on from that. And now they're just like Trump, Russia. You know, they're not like, hey, why'd we lose to this guy?
Yeah, well, the demographic that, you know, the Wisconsin people, you know, the blue-collar people that voted for Trump really bought a con. It's a con. I mean, he's not on their side. He's not of their class. He does not have their best interests at heart, you know. And it may be hard for them to hear that, but, you know, it's what they have to understand if we're ever going to move forward from this. But this was a mistake, and everybody is hurting from it. The Russian thing is just one, you know, it's just the big that they're using now. Although, I should say in the book, I do one thing that you don't actually see a lot of in the various media, and that is there's a whole chapter called The Parapolitics of Russia.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, in which I go name by name through all the people who have been assassinated, starting with Litvinenko, who died from polonium poisoning, you know, which takes a nuclear reactor to actually get the stuff, and demonstrate, you know, that that's why we don't want to be such friends with Russia. They are assassins of their own political leadership, you know. And as somebody who spent a lot of time writing about the JFK case. You know, I mean, that was what was wretched about that experience in our history, that, you know, the CIA had something to do with, without going into too many of the theories, our secret government, our military-industrial complex had JFK killed. You know, everybody understands that. Anybody who looks at the literature and reads enough of it knows that that's true. And, in fact, that's also the official conclusion of the U.S. government. You know,
right.
We're talking about that. The Russians do that as a matter of the hardwired structure of the way they operate as a government. You know, not as a one-off, even though obviously JFK wasn't a one-off either. I mean, RFK, Martin Luther King, I mean, for the longest time, assassination was the way people came to power here.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But it's totally hardwired into the Russian system, and, you know, we don't want that to have to be a worldwide way of doing business, you know?
Right, absolutely, yeah. Well, we don't want, that's one thing it's one of many things we don't want to adopt, the Russian way of doing things, yes.
Yeah. So I'm saying, that chapter, you know, if anybody gets the book, then I hope they read that chapter over any other, just to review that history. I mean, because people have kind of the vague idea that Russia's a bad place and they do bad things. You know, you really need to go through case by case and see how they've assassinated people, kill the press.
Right, right. It's wild. Like, that chapter keeps going because you're like, it just keeps going, and you're going, you know, you're like, what the, this gets heavy, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I said in my sort of like text preview of this, it's like you say something in, well, the book really kind of like sums up a lot of what I've been thinking, but you say it so eloquently, something that I've been nibbling at the edges of over the last, like, 10 weeks of doing this show since we came back from our long hiatus. And you say, this sort of discourse, a battle of conspiracies, became central to public discussion and celebrated by Trump supporters. Now, aside from the part that it's celebrated by Trump supporters, the big takeaway here is what I have been saying on the show for ages the last few weeks. It's like the world has gotten so fucked up that it's just like, what conspiracy theory do you believe? Like, people don't – there's no shared reality unless you're all on the same – you know, well, it's a bifurcated reality or something like that. It's a multi-fragmented reality that centers around all these different conspiracy theories. You know, it's like, you either think Trump colluded with Russia and there's a connection there or something, or you think that it's all made up and that's a conspiracy. So it's like, Jesus Christ, dude. You know, it's crazy.
Right.
And you and I know as well as anybody are is convinced it's a conspiracy theorist to change your mind. So that makes me worried about the future of the country.
Well, the thing is, there's Trump is on and on about what is fake news, and he's trying to tell us that, you know, anything that CNN or MSNBC reports is fake news. But the thing is, there are also fake conspiracy theories, you know. And one of the points I make, I do a whole chapter, in fact, called Conspiracy Celebrity. And the example that I point out is Jesse Ventura.
Right.
You remember Jesse? He's a great conspiracy theorist, and he's only one of many people that take on the mantle of being a conspiracy theorist. It's part of their public profile, part of their public relations. Here comes that conspiracy theorist guy who's really cued in on the darkness. But Jesse Ventura came into power during a time when when a guy I knew, the governor here, Mel Carnahan, died in a plane crash, and he was supposedly, John Ashcroft was supposed to take over his spot after he died in this air crash, but it actually went to his widow, and John Ashcroft became the attorney general. This is in the early 2000s, during the George Bush years.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Wellstone, senator from Minnesota, died in a plane crash, you know, Minnesota, where Jesse Ventura is from. Now, Ventura doesn't have any theories about Carnahan or Wellstone, but the real, you know, those plane crashes are very curious and, you know, should be investigated by serious researchers. But Jesse Ventura is on and on about every, you know, 9/11 and, you know, anything else that you know, will fit that little profile. But it doesn't discuss, you know, the actual real conspiracies that we could probably learn a lot from. because that's the whole period when George Bush became president. You know.
Yeah.
You know, a very conspiratorial graph for power right there.
Yeah.
Assassinations leading up to, you know, the recount.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It can kind of trace from there. Yeah, to 9/11, and then a whole bunch of weird. Yeah, that was certainly a distinct sort of like 2-year era of high conspiracy weirdness, and what I have. It's funny. I took scant notes on this because I knew we were going to be bebopping and scatting around during the show. I only had like a handful of notes, and one of them is exactly what you just mentioned. That's the sort of like celebrities dipping their toe in conspiracy culture, and it's like I think you definitely made the point in the book where it's like they're not. Folks, they're not part of, like, the conspiracy community. They're not putting the work in. They're just co-opting the thing to give themselves, like, you know, a reputation as sort of like, you know, counterculture.
Yeah, it's a toehold. You know, Alex Jones uses it to great effect. But, you know, you watch InfoWars or whatever he's on, and he's got to... you know, he's selling vitamins and powders, and what he's done is he's used his conspiracy theory reputation to create a popular entertainment show that sells commercials, just for, you know, CNN or anybody else, you know,
right?
Totally co-opted from the first. It's all about consumerism, buying things. It's a picture of reality, not even reality. It's just. The spectacle, you know, it's a way of presenting the world that helps them sell things, and that's, you know, that's the fundamental conspiracy of America. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's true, and you're right about how it's like he. I mean, it's amazing. I've reflected on this with other people on the show. It's just amazing because I've been doing this for like 11 or 12 years now. It's stunning to see how the evolution of Alex Jones. Like, I mean, that kind of encapsulates, in a way, as you say, that, you know, the triumph of the conspiracy spectacle. It's like, he was getting name dropped by the fucking president last summer. It's like,
this is, you know, if your memory goes back far enough, you remember that this was a guy who drove around the streets of, what was it, from Austin. With a megaphone. And I actually, you know, wrote about him and reported about him, and he said, you know, this is great. He's a citizen activist who's, you know, picking up a megaphone and is talking to anybody who listened to him, because that was really a genuine, you know, I think a genuinely unique thing.
Yeah.
But then it grew into an industry. Then it grew into an industry. It's co-opted and, you know, became who he is now. The prototype of the cranky old white guy.
Yeah, I've kind of likened him to like the modern day, like, but a super extreme, you know, like Morton Downey Jr. for 2017. Like, it's kind of how I see him.
But you can see him, you know, there's a movie called The Waking Life. Do you know that one?
Yeah. It's like half cartoon or it's cartoon or something like that.
It's a cartoon. Alex Jones is in it. Yeah, actually, Alex Jones is actually in two cartoons. There's another one, I forget the title of it, it's based on a Philip K. Dick story. But Alex Jones' character is in there too. But he's, you know, actually he's a rotoscoped animation with his megaphone driving around in that movie, Waking Life.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's when, you know, that's when I thought he was worth paying attention to. And now it's kind of silly. It's like, you know, something very similar is going on with in the UFO community with Sean David Morton. Do you follow that?
Oh, yeah, I've been closely following. Yeah. I wish I was closely following Sean David Morton now because he's on the lam. He's been on the run for almost a month.
I met Sean in, like, 1992 at Area 51, and I saw him from a distance. I was just a little alien, you know, the little dinosaur. And he was holding court, and he knew his shit. You know, he knew UFO lore, and he was talking to, you know, people there, and he was giving tours of Area 51. And he was a young guy, and he was enthusiastic. I did an interview with him. I put it in Steam Shovel Press. And then, you know, it dawned on him that all these people, he was giving it, you know, giving a genuine service from the heart when he was a young guy, and then he realized there's money in this.
Yeah.
And he started working these angles. Mm-hmm. And then he became a future predicting guru, and then the money got out of control. But, you know, one question I have, though, is what has Sean Morton, David Morton, done that David Trump hasn't? you know?
That Donald Trump had nothing. He just started, I guess Trump just, he was born on third and thought he hit a triple, that old thing, you know?
That's right.
He had quite the head start on a charlatan like Sean David Morton.
Yeah, but, you know, he's the head of the country, and Sean David Morton is some UFO nut on the lam from the law.
Well, that's true. Well, it's funny. It's
the same tax dodges. It's the same come-ons. It's the same swindles, you know.
I'd love to know the thought process of Donald Trump when it comes to, you mentioned, like, how Sean David Morton's the UFO guy. Like, I think Trump assiduously avoided the UFO topic. Cause, like, something entirely fishy about that whole thing, because, like, that's all they fucking talked about with Hillary Clinton. Well, not all of it, but you know what I'm saying. It was a running theme of her campaign that she was the UFO lady.
Mm-hmm.
And, like,
mm-hmm.
no one ever, for all the interviews that Trump did, no one ever asked him about it. No one brought it up. Like, what? It's so,
well, yeah,
I don't get it.
Considering the advocate under Clinton for UFO stuff was Podesta. And it was those Podesta emails that is what the whole Trump controversy is about. So you would think that the UFO – I shoehorned UFO stuff in the book three different ways.
Yeah.
There was an incident where his helicopter was buzzed by a UFO.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's these Podesta emails, just because Podesta is well-known as somebody who's involved in the UFO community and talking about aliens. And then the other one was this connection to Maury Island. Now, you know, thank God for this 90 degrees of separation from the JFK assassination talent that I've developed over the years.
Yeah.
But there's a UFO connection with Trump through JFK, through this whole business that he came up with trying to accuse Ted Cruz's father of being there with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah.
There's a UFO connection to that. And it's kind of complicated, and I'll explain it slowly if you want me to go on. But
sure, if you want to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's really funny because you
go for it. Yeah, give the folks a taste of the new book, Trumpocalypse Now.
Okay.
See, we're learning
from
Alex Jones. We're figuring out how to sell shit now.
That's right. Sell the book. You should mention that Childress wanted to call the book the Trump Files.
Oh, God.
That's everything. You know, that's your way of signaling it's a conspiracy book.
Yeah, but it's so, yeah, that's like putting para in front of anything nowadays. It's like it immediately loses its value.
Yeah, it's gone. That moment is come and gone, I think. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the deal is, remember during the campaign, Trump tried to make this big deal that there's a photograph of Ted Cruz's father, Raphael, with Lee Harvey Oswald passing out fair play for Cuba flyers,
right,
around New Orleans, and it was debunked, the media, the mass media, whatever, the mainstream media, debunked it without looking into it, and it was all kind of laughed off. But the point that was really lost on it all was that operation in New Orleans, the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, Oswald handing out those flyers, is a cover operation. Oswald is trying to infiltrate the pro-Castro community. That's why he's passing out those flyers. It's an operation, and if Raphael was involved, and you know, the dates roughly match up, it could be him. If he's involved, he's doing his patriotic duty. He's working as a CIA's secret agent, basically,
right,
passing out pro-Castro stuff to infiltrate that community. And that was lost. He was doing his patriotic duty. It should not have been any mark against Ted Cruz. It was his grandfather doing something very patriotic and very dangerous. So that was lost. But the point that brings it back into the UFO world is that operation was run by Guy Bannister. And, you know, if you remember Oliver Stone's movie, Guy Bannister was played by Ed Asner.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't actually prosecuted by Jim Garrison, but he was part of Jim Garrison's case in 1968 in New Orleans, because he was active with David Ferry and in Oswald Circle. He's a guy who was known in 1947. he was up there in Puget Sound on Maury Island. He found a 30-inch flying saucer there was a new item that appeared up there in Maury Island. He was part of the Maury Island, the whole part of the Maury Island story. He's a long-acting actor, a guy who clearly knew and must have been involved with Fred Crisman, who Garrison thought was the Grassy Knoll shooter. So all those connections are just totally lost on people.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can see.
And, the way it plays in the media is that Trump came up with some strange story, this National Enquirer type story, and he was a fool for doing it. He was a fool. He didn't really know what the story was all about. But there's more to the story. If you actually, take a look at the, parapolitical underpinnings, conspiracy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, for sure. That's the funny part where it's like a double reverse in some sense. They shit on him for pulling it out of the National Enquirer, which is like code for like the conspiracy subculture. Unfortunately, but yeah. When it's like, oh wait a minute, dude. Actually, we can look at it a whole different way. But they're too lazy to do that. I mean, I don't even know what. Sometimes I just don't understand like how the media, they just never really seem to do their due diligence on all this. It was like always a big reality show for them, and it blew up on them.
One of the things about what Trump says about the media is that it's largely true. A lot of what he said. I mean, if you ask anybody who works for CNN about Lee Harvey Oswald, for instance, to a person, they will say that he acted alone. That whole reality tunnel. They have bought that whole reality tunnel where there are no conspiracies. The idea of conspiracy is, until Trump came along anyway, was anathema to them. We're all conspiracy nuts.
Well, that's the thing I find interesting, too. I don't want people to like freak out like I'm trying to go to hyperbole, but I find this interesting in a sense. Like, you've got the JFK assassination, you got 9/11, and then you have the Trump election. I feel like each one kind of like just blew people's minds, and caused all these conspiracies to like spring up in a big way. And that's sort of what we're living in now.
The spectacle.
Yeah, exactly. The spectacle. Right. What I find interesting, though, and like confounding in a sense, is like that, I guess for JFK, it was like much later, and for 9/11, it still really hasn't taken yet, but like the media like didn't touch the conspiracy theory stuff. But with Trump, they're like going full bore into this conspiracy. Like, it's like, I watch this new nightly news and I'm like, if they had fucking dug into 9/11 this bad or fucking the JFK assassination, we wouldn't even have any questions. Like, they're going full bore to unearth every fucking meeting these people went to every day of the week. Like, where the fuck was all this for those things? And it just really makes you think.
That's a very good point. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they've learned over the years, except that, they still haven't caught on JFK, for instance.
Right.
You see, a lot of times you see Dan Rather coming on the CNN shows, it being critical of Trump and all this stuff, as if he has never been introduced into conspiracy thinking. You may remember this. There are like radio tapes of him discussing the Grassy Knoll shot and in reverse of what happens, of what you see in the Zapruder film.
Yeah, and he was like one of the only people to see it or something like that, right?
So, right. And then when he gets on the radio, he describes it in reverse of what actually happens. And it was years, much later when the thing finally came out, that you can see what a contradiction. So what was he doing? He's seeing the same film that everybody else sees. He can see that the shot is coming from the right front, and Kennedy goes, gets pushed back to the left. But he says the reverse of that because he's got a story that the bullet has to come from the book depository.
Yeah.
So there's clear evidence that he's involved with some kind of cover up. Mass media main guy on TV news. And so now he's coming on, and he's a super critic of the conspiracy of Trump. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, the whole thing is, like, weird because it makes you – as I said at the beginning, I'm a card-carrying member of the Trump-Russia conspiracy, but, as I'm an open-minded individual also. I'm not one of these crazy people that's, like, on the far on either side that's, like, immutable. And to me, it's like that – if there's one thing about the whole story that, like, doesn't make sense, it is, in a sense, the voraciousness which with they're going after this story. When it's like any other fucking conspiracy story, they would completely blow off. It's like, does this mean that, you know, Trump because he insulted the media so much, he's lost the control of the media that all the other presidents ostensibly, presumably, allegedly had? Like, what is it? You know, it's confounding in a sense, I guess. Just confounding.
Right. Well, I mean, if you watch Fox at all, their whole attitude is that all the other media, they're all Democrats that resent the fact that Hillary Clinton lost. And that's what this is all about. And in reality, what's actually going on, you know, and I don't defend CNN or MSNBC. What I think is actually happening is what's classically known as a false dialogue, you know, and that's usually what happens in our election. You know, Hillary Clinton was, like I said, I was in the vanguard of pointing out corruptions and conspiracies in that Washington Post article.
Absolutely,
you know, I became proverbial for them. They put me in their fast right-wing. And their theory, remember, their theory about conspiracies at that point was that people would plant stories in the press overseas, and that would be picked up by the American press. And the first example they gave was my article, which I wrote for the Washington Post. And I'm an American. So, you know, so their theory was screwed up from the beginning. But they, you know, they're wealthy, they're corrupt, they're guilty, every bit as guilty as Trump is in many ways.
Yeah, yeah. So, for different sorts of scandalous crime shit that, you know, they somehow got away with. Like, you know.
Yeah, so, but in the defense, you know, if you want to be critical of Trump with, you know, some thinking person, usually the defense is, well, I kind of lost my point here. That Hillary is as bad as Trump,
right?
But better to be like better to have Hillary than Trump.
It's like she's a more skilled criminal. Like she managed, this guy's, you know, they've got him by the short hairs. Like 6 months into his presidency, she, like, you know, her and Bill managed to escape through all kinds of fucking shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like people talk, you know that whole thing. It's like, oh, what about Hillary? What about? It's in a way, it's like, hey man, if we're gonna get really fucking evil, I'd rather back the person that doesn't get caught. So, that person's good at what they do, you know? It's like, oh, fuck Obama, and all this shit. It's like, dude, they weren't talking about impeaching the fucking guy. Like, so he must be really good at being a secret tyrant, you know? So I'd rather that than the dude who fucking tweets every day confessing to crimes and shit.
Well, but again, the point is that there is no countervailing force. I mean, ordinarily we have a Republican-Democrat fight, but now Trump has crashed everything. You know, the Democrats are in a disarray. There's no leadership there at all.
I'm going to sound completely insane, but I'll say it anyway because I want to be one of the first people to predict it if it happens. And that is, I'm telling you, folks, don't sleep on The Rock. I think The Rock is either going to be the next president or he's fucking going to run for president sooner than later. They're already – you talked about the Segelian dialect. It's like – and I talked about how creepy it would be if they put out somebody who's like – who harnesses the Trump energy without having all the baggage. It's like the guy is The Rock. He'll reunite everybody, but everybody likes The Rock. And it'll be like
– maybe a new Reagan, right? A new macho hero.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I did go into the book about Schwarzenegger, who was like buddies with Kurt Waldheim, who was, you know, one of the managers of Auschwitz, Germany.
Well, you mentioned people are gonna, it sounds crazy, but it's like Jesse Ventura, Donald Trump, Arnold Schwarzenegger, they've all been mixed up in the world of like wrestling and entertainment you know, and then off of that, Ronald Reagan. I'm sure if he lived, he would have been involved in wrestling too. You know, he's tailor-made for that world. So it's like there's a certain skill set that you acquire in that field that makes you, I think, a good politician. So
remember what Reagan was involved in. You know, it was Iran-Contra. Mm-hmm. You know, he was selling weapons to our enemies so that they can make money to fight the Contras in Nicaragua.
Yeah.
And then there was the Insull case, which is what, you know, my book The Octopus is all about. You know, the promise on and all that. You know, we kind of forget about that. We got this image of Ronald Reagan as, you know, great cowboy hero, but his administration was so bogged down in corruption and conspiracy. It's actually kind of remarkable that he survived.
Yeah, that's true, because, I mean, I was too young for it, but I missed the whole Iran-Contra thing by, like, 5 years probably, so I don't really know enough about it. But somebody mentioned, not in the chat room, but somebody mentioned on Facebook a few days ago, which is like, do you get mixed up in these arguments and shit? You probably don't. You're probably, like, above it all, but I have to see them. I see them like you drive by an accident, so it's like...
Well, actually, I have two Facebook pages. One of them is Ken Thomas, parentheses, Steam Shovel Press. And I use that one to mostly to transmit ideas and facts and stuff that have come along. But I get involved in the debates, you know, if somebody says something particularly egregious. As long as it's not the whole Alex Jones style of just being angry and calling everybody names and it's, you know, I put up with only a small amount of that. Only when I'm angry, I want to call people names.
Right. Well, somebody said, I've never heard this. I don't know if you'd even call it a conspiracy theory. It's probably true or something in a sense, but it was like glossed over. But somebody mentioned something about Ted Kennedy working with the Russians to like undermine Reagan's presidency. Do you know anything about this sort of idea? Or is that just something that somebody picked up somewhere and was spewing it?
Ted Kennedy and the Russians?
Yeah.
Nah, it's not ringing any bells in me right now.
I should have Googled it before I asked you, but I've never heard this before.
I do think it's interesting that, you know, that it's, the left now has latched onto the Russians as the demons. Mm. Because, you know, throughout the 60s, you know, if you were a beatnik, well, that was a red smear, remember? That comes off of Sputnik. You know, anybody who was part of the counterculture was being manipulated by the Russians, the communists. You know, they were the bad guys. They're for us, growing up, all, you know, and now they've kind of squished allegiances.
Yeah. Well, it's very weird.
Yeah.
Well, that's the fucked up part, too, because people say they showed, like, a survey where it was, like, Republicans who have a favorable opinion of, like a Putin's favorability opinion is going up, like with Republicans, which is like insane. You know, I like to see the side by side to see if they like him better than Trump at this point. But it's very weird. You know, they've done a complete 180, you know, and they're all cool with Russia now.
Well, you know, Putin is a seething evil intelligence. Trump is big boom. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is like it's. I mean, yeah. Well, it all comes down to, I guess, like, do you think Russia's evil or not? Because then it turns into, like, well, should we team up with Russia or not? And that turns into, you know, well, then they shouldn't be working with Russia. So it's all very, you know, if you circle back, it's like, are we being manipulated to hate Russia? I don't know. They seem pretty evil to me, but I don't know what's going on. You know what I mean?
Well,
that's when you get really deep in the weeds.
A lot of that popular sentiment comes out of a reaction to what is perceived as the New World Order.
Right.
Which is not exactly a conspiracy, you know. I mean, Marshall Plan, World War II, defeat of the Nazis. They did create a new world order to try to maintain peace. a lot of it was done conspiratorially, but with the advent of nuclear bombs, for instance, they thought that was necessary. Now we're kind of losing sight of that fact, and you know. That's how Trump is become a hero in many people's eyes, because he's dismantling this new world order that's supposedly suppressing us all.
Absolutely. But.
But the point is, it's like, you know, it's like, who killed Kennedy? It wasn't exactly the CIA. They were like the trigger men, It was the military-industrial complex. The military-industrial, if you don't emphasize the industrial, Donald Trump is very much in the center of all that.
Right.
You know, in fact, there's a whole, the whole Russian thing is about, it's probably about these sanctions. You know, he might have even just run for president so that he'd get these sanctions removed because they're preventing him from being able to do business in Russia.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure he stands to financially gain if the sanctions are removed. He has his finger in all kinds of pies, so I would assume so.
Yeah. And, you know, and the corruption runs deep. One thing is that the Russians are heavily invested in retirement programs in this country, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
There's a lot of Russian money in the U.S., a lot of it.
So they're going to ruin everyone's retirement somehow. They're already working on it. They're doing a good job of that already, it seems.
Retiring becoming Russian citizens, right?
What's that?
We're all going to retire and work in a global bureaucracy that's mostly Russian, that's annexed America.
Yeah, it seems some. Yeah.
That's the way the baby boom is going to end on these retirement programs in a global oppressive state.
Well, I hope not, but you know, it's crazy. Like I said,
anything really can happen. You know, Trump is not going to survive, and then it's wide open. You know, because there's no political leadership anywhere. So that's exciting. This is all bad news. It's horrible. It's awful. But it will end. You know, and something new will come along. You know, and it's inevitable. So you know.
Yeah. Well, that's
stay positive.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, that's what I tell people. You know, I tell my family and shit. Like, don't worry so much about it. Like, it's not. You know, I think we're gonna be okay. You know, I'm okay so far. I'm frustrated and annoyed, but I'm okay.
Right, and you know, he seems to be self-destructing early enough that he hasn't really affected. Obamacare or, you know, or done anything to really dismantle important parts of, you know, the superstructure we have, the welfare state.
Yeah. No, he hasn't totally upset the apple cart yet. It's like that people, like, it's like that climate accord thing. It's, I get why people were upset, but it's like the guy, it can't even kick in till like 2019. Will you fucking relax? Like, I don't think he's going to make it to 2019 as the president. So, like, I just
yeah. –
it may actually even not kick in until after the next presidential election. And I fucking just do not believe for one second that he'll run for a second term, even if he makes it all the way, you know, even if he makes it through these 4 years. I think he hates this fucking job. I mean, what do you think of that whole idea? Like, he's got – he gets no – like, I think that he's fucking miserable, and I think he really regrets making this decision because, like, the eyes of, like, the country's police force are digging into everything he's ever done. Like, he's pretty much fucked himself.
Yeah, and the thing is, it hasn't worked. I mean, if all this collusion with the Russians was really about making sure that he could make more money by getting the sanctions lifted and creating a better business atmosphere – with Russia, that didn't work. It failed. So now what's he got? Nothing but, you know, the all of the different miseries that attend that office.
Right.
So yeah, I agree. And he's a pampered. You know, he's just always been a pampered little rich guy. And you know, this is probably really torturous for him.
Yeah, I mean, look at like you go from partying all the. I don't know about partying, but you go from like hobnobbing with celebrities and all these Hollywood things. And it's like a whole different tenor when you're at, like, the G20 and shit. Like, they showed a picture of him just kind of sitting there twiddling his thumbs, probably because he was bored out of his fucking mind.
Oh, you know? That's mostly the way you see him these days, unless he's in front of some kind of political rally where, you know, where his supporters are feeding him the ego energy. He looks pretty bored and miserable.
I don't blame him. I mean, I don't know. I'd probably feel the same way, but that's why I'm not running for president. But yeah, he seems so. I can't imagine he's going to even. I think some he'll try and. That's the big question. Like, how's it going to? It's a really crazy. It really is like a TV show in a lot of ways. It's like it's like reality has turned into like the greatest reality show we can imagine because it's like how the fuck is this going to end? Like we've signed up. We're on. We've invested in the show now. Like we have to go to the end of the show. It's like, how is this insane show going to end? It's scary.
The Society of the Spectacle. Yeah, actually, I have a quote in the book from Guy Debord, who, you know, in the '50s, the Situationists actually kind of and talked about this a great deal. I mean, since the '50s, it's been that way. Everything is part of a show, and actually, you can in many ways you can foretell the future. Well, there is another part in the book. It's in one of the appendices where I discuss these episodes of Route 66. Have we ever talked about this before? Probably not, since we only talk once every 5 or 6 years. But there's this program called Route 66.
Yeah, this is the connections to the JFK assassination, right?
Right. In 1962, a year before it happened. So it's the idea that in the what happens in the media predicts what actually can happen. I mean, the other case, another important case about it is Fred Crisman, the guy who's the Grassy Knoll shooter, said that that TV show The Invaders, you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He said that that show was about him and that it had, you know, telegraphed. And this is a guy that, again, Jim Garrison thought was the Grassy Knoll shooter. He said his whole life was being played out. And as it turned out, one of the script consultants for that show was the guy that's currently recognized in history as Deep Throat, Watergate, who was also the guy that approved Fred Crisman's work application to work at the Hanford Nuclear Reactor. So, and again, there were three episodes of Route 66, which had details of the Kennedy assassination. They were broadcast, actually two of them were broadcast before it happened, and the third one, they actually had to remove from broadcast because it was literally about a political assassination. It was scheduled to be broadcast on November 22nd, 1963.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's very weird.
So this whole thing about how the Simpsons predicted Trump, you followed that at all?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
But I think you cleared it up in a way, too, because, or at least,
well,
I think anyone who looks deeply enough, not even, you know, it's like a puddle. You don't have to dig too deep. People post a picture of him going down the escalator, and it's like, that was from a later thing that they made, but they only mentioned him in a previous episode, but it's all conflated where people are like, that's from The Simpsons 20 years ago. And it's like, no, that's from The Simpsons last month.
Right, it was exaggerated, way exaggerated. The elevator ride was definitely off, but it was like in 2002. I think Lisa Simpson had to run against President Trump being reelected.
Yeah. They definitely wrote him as a former president on the an episode where they go into the future. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's like. Well, that's, you know, like you said, the Route 66 thing, the lone gunman thing. I don't really believe. I mean, the Simpsons one's way wicked tenuous, where it's like they said they were just making a joke about they needed someone who'd be a shitty president as for the joke. I mean, that was the only, you know, there wasn't like a time traveler in there. Like, I don't think one of the Simpsons writers back then was a time traveler. Although any real hardcore conspiracy theorist, please dig into that one for us and come back to us with your notes.
But what are we then? What do we make about? Let's take one of the Route 66 episodes. Right? There's one that opens up at Fort Worth. This episode opens up to Fort Worth, the Fort Worth Airport, where Kennedy flew in. One of the guys, and you remember Route 66 was a kind of a remake of Kerouac and Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
These two guys travel the country. One of the guys gets a job at the Trademark, which is where JFK was supposed to speak before the. The motorcade route was rerouted. Also on the show, one of the guys gets us on the phone with Charles Cabell, who was the city executive who actually rerouted the motorcade route to make that right turn to put him on Elm Street to put him into the sniper's nest. You know, and then like two or three other things, and all these little details about the Kennedy assassination in a show that is broadcast a year before it happened. You know. I one time talked to John Judge about this. You know Judge, right? Did you ever talk to Judge?
The name doesn't ring a bell, actually.
No.
So
John Judge is the inheritor, was the inheritor of May Brussels' mantle as a conspiracy expert. May Brussels is the mother of us all, the queen mother of conspiracy theorists, a brilliant woman, a researcher, And she, her protege was John Judge, who created the Coalition on Political Assassinations in D.C. And for many years, it was, you know, like the main conference to go. He would do conferences in D.C. and Dallas and in Memphis, too. And he was, like, the main conspiracy organizer for many, many years. And his idea about the Route 66 thing is that, you know, they're actually, you know, that people who planning, who work for planning, who are, you know, part of the CIA that plan assassinations and all that stuff, actually crop them out, you know, that the script writers for somebody like Route 66. I mean, it could just be, you know, this all could just be coincidence, because there's so many of them. You'd have to at least call it synchronicity. But that you know, that they actually work out the details of an assassination like the JFK hit in the scripts, because it's a perfect opportunity to do it, to see how it all play out.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, it's intriguing, yeah. I mean, some of the more, like the lone gunman one, that's kind of another one where it's like, it's harder to write off in a sense. It's like, well, where the fuck, you know, did that come from? You know,
That appeared in the March before 9/11,
mm-hmm.
and it had a plane headed toward the Trade Tower. So the thing is, it also had the plane was turned around by something called the Octium chip, which was an oblique reference to the Promise software, which is the book I wrote about the octopus. The whole octopus conspiracy has to do with this Promise software, which gets to the heart actually of what we're discussing. Because the Promise software, we know how computers track our every movement nowadays. But the thing about the Promise software is it has this fantastic extrapolation capacity. And this was like in 1992. Danny Castellaro is the writer who was investigating this. So it could tell you, and that's the whole point of it being in this lone gunman thing and all these shows that predict things. It predicted things. So here was a show that was telling us about the Octium Promise software prediction capability. Here it is predicting 9/11.
Yeah, it's weird.
it's all very strange.
Well, there's a whole underlying, like, it's like kind of funny that you mentioned that in a sense. I think you sort of touched on it a little bit there, but it's like there's a whole underlying thing here too. It's like I would call it probably like the big conspiracy that arose up in the Obama years that I think was the most serious one, was sort of like this widespread spying stuff that's going on. You know what I mean? So that's sort of like underneath all this shit, where it's like a lot. I think it's going to be revelatory if they really try and nail Trump, because I think a lot of it's going to be like all these recordings and intercepts and shit that they legally got within the confines of national security. It'll raise all these questions like, you know, is it fair, quote unquote, that they caught Trump, you know, working with the Russians via all this data collection that the NSA is doing? I think it's going to be like it's going to be a mind blower in a lot of ways for people, because they're not sure they're going to have a real cross to bear on that one.
Yeah, thinking along these lines, I wonder how much, you know, I mean, the unlikelihood that Donald Trump ever got elected, you know, recalls the unlikelihood that George W. Bush who was never elected, but the unlikely paths that these people take to the president, you know, it's never an outright, a victory in a true democratic sense. There's always some squirrely little thing. As if they've been, you know, like Donald Trump was a television character, you know, kind of a brutal boss television character, and they were going to put him in there, one way or another, and you know the weird set of circumstances that made him president. It's the same thing with George W. Bush. All these guys, you know, and Bush of course got us, you know, into the Iraq War, and you know everything about George Bush's presidency was just a joke.
Yeah,
and just like, you know, with Donald Trump and all these guys that are just, you know, they're either malevolent or
incompetent.
Or incompetent, but never get there in a legitimate way.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Yeah, you made a point of that. Yeah, and you referenced the the Bill Hicks joke, where it's like the Democrats, they all, or something like the Republicans, they only get wounded. And
well, okay, right, yeah, the assassination, sure. Okay, yeah, JFK killed, RFK killed, Martin Luther King killed, Reagan wounded, George Wallace wounded.
Yeah, yeah, it's very.
You know, never get them all the way, and then of course it appears to the media like, so there's a balance here. You know, everybody, you know, there's a certain amount of people. One side gets shot, certain amount of people never get shot.
Yeah, but, yeah.
And,
well, that's yeah. So, I could go off on a whole other tangent, but we'll I might circle back to that. But yeah, it's just really interesting. I thought it was like there's a sense, like I said before, it's like I don't want to be melodramatic here, folks, but it's like the JFK thing, the 9/11 thing, and now this Trump thing. It's like you point out in the book. I feel like this is a new chapter. We're in a new era here, folks. Like, this is a real change in the world that is on par with those events. And it's like you can kind of see it in a sense, because this is where I mentioned your book. You pointed out in the book, it's like in his march to the presidency, he first wiped out Bush and sort of like wiped the slate clean of all the conspiracies that were swirling around that guy. It was like he yeah. triumphed over whatever string-pulling powers that be magic that the Bush family had. He beat them. And then he beat Clinton and all the Clinton machine. He defeated, you know, the whole liberal, you know, industrial complex. So, you know, and so that's why I think we're at the beginning, or we're on the precipice of some whole new thing here, because I think that's the story they are trying to tell us. Whoever, you know, whoever is the hand of fate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I was almost a Trump supporter in the early days when he first came on the scene, and I saw he was decimating the Republican Party. I was thinking, well, what's so bad about that?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I didn't really think he would win like everybody else. Yeah. But you see, the thing about it is, you know, like John Stewart and Steve Colbert, it was the culture of ridicule. I even reproduced in the book all the, you know, the front pages of the New York Post and newspapers, you know, with Trump in clown white, you know, and being called an asshat and all this stuff. That worked in his favor. All that worked in his favor. We love to laugh at the clown. And you know, if he has a broad support, that's where it comes from. You know, I think his actual, you know, of the voting public, he has a very small demographic, and you know, but enough in the right places that he got the Electoral College. But the broad base, I mean, I like it. You know, I think it's a pretty funny show too. You know, but I guess it all depends on how it concludes. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, yeah. Believe me, man, I've said before, it's like, I liked Bernie Sanders, dude. I want to be a part of a populist movement. I just don't want one who's led by fucking crazy Donald Trump. Like, yeah. Like that's why I said, you know, you throw the rock up there, dude, I'll have a bumper sticker on by the morning. You know, yeah. I'm all for the populist movement as long as it has, like, someone with some sense behind it. But
well,
not that I know if the rock... as the sense behind it, but he's a crafty businessman. I think he'd know how to run a country. That's, you know, I think better than Trump would, at least.
Well, you know, if it's all image, if it's all spectacle, you know, maybe you're right. You know, one of the things about Bernie Sanders, I was a big Bernie Sanders fan because he, back in the 60s, he wrote an article for the East Village Other about Wilhelm Reich. It was one of my weird conspiracy interests, as you probably know.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And it was very interesting. He wrote a review of The Cancer Biopathy, which was a book that that Reich wrote about possible cancer cures that was misrepresented a lot of ways. And, in fact, even though Bernie Sanders thought it was a good book and thought Reich was onto something, he didn't actually write about any of Reich's experimental work. It's just more of the psychological aspect, which, you know, gets characterized as you get cancer because – you feel bad about yourself, that it's an emotional problem.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so and Bernie Sanders kind of applauded that idea in Mother Jones, of all things. But, you know, I thought anybody who has an exposure to Reich, you know, at least he has something, you know, he's got, you know, more intellectual cojones than, you know, your typical party hack. So, that got me on board with Bernie.
Yeah. And again, it's like people, anyone who's like listening to this and going, "Ah, Benal, fuck you," or still listening, who's like, "Fuck you, Benal, you don't support Trump." It's like, dude, Hillary's a, I support fucking Bernie, man. I supported Bernie. Hillary screwed him. Like, and everybody knows that. That conspiracy's been pretty much revealed. It's like, you know, it's another one of those conspiracies. It's like, all up until those emails leaked, everyone was kind of like, I kind of think there's something shady going on here. And then all that shit came out, and everyone was like, okay, something shady happened, you know?
Well, I mean, like I said, my feeling is that it's a false dialogue, you know? We'd certainly be having a different conversation if Hillary Clinton had won. But it wouldn't be that much different, you know? I wouldn't be sitting and saying, oh, thank God we had Hillary Clinton.
No, not at all.
Early as 1992, I was attacking them for, you know, conspiratorial problems in a presidency.
Absolutely. Well, that's a good point, because it's like, if Hillary had won, I think a lot of the mood of the country would be in the same vein. I think she would be like besieged with scandals, and you know, but it would be going through the same thing where it'd be like the country is in complete gridlock because the president is beset by scandals. So like you're right in a sense where it's. And I've heard this sort of argument just on a basic level from people, just in observationally being like, these are the two best people you can put forward. But it's like, maybe that's the fucking conspiracy, folks. Maybe that's the conspiracy that, like, they just wanted to make sure they put forward any president who would be besieged by scandals. So it didn't matter who won as long as it was someone who was in that kind of position.
Maybe. Wow, that's good. Actually, that's a pretty good idea there, Tim. You know, that actually fits into my conception of conspiracy spectacle, you know. That's what they want to put out there, somebody who can create this kind of controversy to keep the show going on while, you know, whatever nefarious forces are doing what they're doing. We get somebody entertaining us with one corruption scandal after another.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I learned from the best, man. I've been following your work for a long time.
Well, that's great. Yeah, so we solved the world problems. So you guys can.
Yeah, we just solved the conspiracy tonight, folks. So I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do a complete 180 now. Don't trust the Rock. He's gonna be offered as the answer, and God knows what he's gonna bring us. But yeah. Now I can have a foot in both camps for when that happens.
Yeah.
But it's been really an interesting ride. It's just. Absolutely mind-blowing. Like I said, it really makes you wonder where the fuck all these people... That's my complaint, in a sense, about Alex Jones, too, where it's like, okay, they say he has the presidency here, and he made his... I know he, like, really made his living on these ads, but it's like he made his bones, let's say, on the lives of these people who died on 9/11. It's like, you helped get this guy elected, man. Why aren't you out and fucking? Why aren't you on the phone with Trump getting this thing reopened? If you're Mr. The government was part of this, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, isn't that typical though? I mean, when you're an outsider, you can sit there and complain and whine, and then when you know finally you come to power, you know, you don't see him, you know, attacking Trump the way.
Oh, not at all. No. I guess in a sense it was smart of Trump to co-opt the conspiracy culture because then it's like no one, you know, but it backfired because then the media was like, well, if he's part of the conspiracy culture, we have to upend that. It's fascinating in a lot of ways. It's a fun, I know people are like scared and nervous, but in a lot of ways, it's a fucking fascinating time to be alive.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what I was saying. It's always, you know, possible to crash and burn everything and things start up anew again. So, yeah, it can be an exciting time. And I can see it. It's scary. You know, it's scary. We could lose our friggin' democracy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, things that we take for granted may be gone. Russia may take over the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's terrifying. I mean, since I'm of the opinion that he's, like, in cahoots with Russia, my whole thing is, like, they need to get this thing straightened out as soon as possible. But, you know, at the same time, it's reached a point where it's like when you get on a fucking airplane. I know people are afraid of flying, but my attitude's always like, once you're up in the air, that's it. Like, what are you worried about? you know? Like, yeah. Unless you're our friend Greg Bishop, you don't have the skill set to jump into the cockpit and take over. Like, you've essentially, like, just given up to fate at that point. So I don't worry about it. At this point, it's like, I can't do anything about this whole thing. So I have to just sit back and watch the spectacle.
I think the last plane ride that I took that I enjoyed was Greg was the pilot, actually. We flew around L.A. like when we visited him. He's coming out here. We're going to have a total solar eclipse. And one of the best places to see it is right here in town. So Greg's going to come out to check that out with me.
Nice. That's like in August?
Yeah. I'm not quite sure the day is. It's early August.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about it, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's got a good book out. We should talk about some books that people need to pick up. And one of them is Reframing the Debate, I believe it's called.
There you go.
It's
Robert
Graham.
It's more memorable than that.
That's close to it. But it's Robbie Graham is the editor of the book. I think Greg has a contribution to it. That's a read. The collected writings of John Judge is out there now, too, called Judge for Yourself. This is my summer reading list. Trump Apocalypse Now, Judge for Yourself, and Reframing the UFO Debate.
There you go. That's the summer reading list?
Yes, that's the summer reading list. And I guess I should tell people how to get the book, huh? How to get my book.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, we're going for, like, till the end of the hour. I hope you know that.
Okay.
So,
I have no idea what part of the hour we're in now.
Like 10 minutes past the hour, so we got like another 45 minutes or so. But tell people,
great.
Tell people where to get the book, because while they're listening to this, they can go and get the book. And
okay.
I got
the
book, so they can get it.
Yeah, there are lots of different ways. Amazon is a big one. Just put Trumpocalypse Now in there. They have that Kindle version, which is really kind of cool. Although I noticed the Kindle version doesn't really cost that much less than the actual book. I don't know what that's about. Shouldn't it be like have that? I don't know.
I thought to myself I should just go buy this book, but it was like the convenience of getting it
And I should mention one of the great things is about the book is that it has an introduction by my friend Rob Sterling, who is a fellow conspiracy writer. He was responsible for a thing called The Conformist with a K, a newsletter that was very popular back in the 90s, and his introduction to the book, I think, is absolutely fabulous. And you can read a good chunk of it on the Look Inside feature at Amazon. So, I mean, even people who are debating whether they want to buy the book or not, just go there and read the first few pages, because Rob is a really good writer. And so that's one place you can get it. You can get it from me if you want an autographed copy. It's like $20 from me, but you have to send $20 to my PayPal account, which is... Can I give that out?
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
Jesus, how short do you think you're on here? I don't give a fuck about anything.
K23Thomas@yahoo.com.
Give it again, because that was archaic. Okay, what was it again?
This is also my email address if somebody wants to get into an email conversation with me. Instead of going, you can find me on Facebook at Ken Thomas, then in parentheses, Steam Show Press. But if you want to directly contact me and my PayPal account, if you want an autographed copy of the book, just send me $20. That'll cover postage and everything. It's at k23thomas@yahoo.com.
There you go. K23thomas. So at yahoo.com?
Yeah. At yahoo.com. That's
there you
right.
go. All right. Nice. So, well, get the book, folks, because I recommend it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And, as you can tell from the conversation so far, it's like I'm really into this shit. I'm right on the cusp of this. That's what I want to ask you about, actually, because I floated this to you this morning, and you weren't really, you had kind of only heard about this stuff vaguely. But like, I don't know if you read that article I sent, but have you looked at this world of Twitter conspiracy theory that's like emerged on the Democratic side? You know, the Trump hashtag Trump Russia. Sort of like celebrities, let's call them.
Well, my first exposure to it was actually the thing you sent, and that was kind of difficult to look at. That was that Vox page, and every time I tried to read the article, a little ad slid down in front, and there was no way to act out of it.
But the internet's made everything better, Ken. Come on.
It's very men in our consciousness, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the gist of it is like there's like three or four people, and you should look into this when you get the chance.
I send you your Bob Dylan list.
I know, I didn't send you the Bob Dylan list, no.
All right.
We're going to talk, Bob, later tonight. Don't worry about that.
Okay, great. But
there's like these folks on Twitter. There's like maybe three or four or five. Like I know Adam Gorelli is a huge fan of Louis Mensch, who's like this lady from England who served in Parliament and then moved to America. And she's the one who reported in October that there was a FISA warrant out on Trump or the Trump campaign, and everyone blew her off as a lunatic. Then it all came out like in like February that was true. And since then, she's her and a couple other people who claim to be connected tease and sort of release a lot of scoops on this Trump Russia story. I mean, somebody needs to do a deep dive into sort of their batting average, but a lot of times they nail shit that's like a couple weeks ahead of time. You know what I mean? And it's become a whole subculture on Twitter of like people that follow this thing and think they're ahead of what's unfolding, if that makes any sense.
Right. So what they're predicting has some truth to it. Actually happens, or
on occasion, they get enough hits. They're kind of like your celebrity psychics. They get enough hits to stay in the ball game. Let's say.
Okay.
They realize that when I get Andre the Giant cinched up in the launch position, when I slam him through the Trump Plaza, brother, from New York down to Tampa, Florida, the fault line is going to break off. And as Andre the Giant falls into the ocean, so will Donald Trump and all the Hulkamaniacs. But as Donald Trump hangs onto the top of the Trump Plaza with his family under his other arm, as they sink to the bottom of the sea, thank God Donald Trump's a Hulkamaniac. He'll know enough to let go of his materialistic possessions, hang on to the wife and kids, dog paddle with his life all the way to safety.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
But Donald, if something happens, you run out of gas, and all those little Hulkamaniacs run out of gas, just hang on to the largest back in the world, and I'll dog paddle us, backstroke all of us to safety.
Oh, and thank you, Hulk Hogan. Let's get back to action. Wow.
Unreal, Donald Trump, one of the Hulkamaniacs.
There he is right there, a Hulkamaniac. You really think so?
Absolutely.